This is KUNC's Colorado Edition. I'm Erin O'Toole.
And I'm Carly Huckles. Demand for more housing in northern Colorado could impact one of Fort Collins' most popular natural areas, and neighbors are speaking out.
Obviously, if we just drop a housing thing on here, that trail closes. It gets so busy and eroded, it goes away.
We take a look at some of the growing pains facing communities along the Northern Front Range.
And you've heard the expression, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. Well, there's a new movement that takes that to a whole new level.
And this is like, bam, bam, bam. By the time you throw that fifth plate, you just break into like tingles in your body.
We'll meet a women's empowerment group in Boulder that's really breaking the mold.
Plus, we visit the campus of the U.S. Air Force Academy, which got a little design help from one of the most famous photographers in the world. And Howie Moshevitz reviews a new film from China, Long Day's Journey Into Night.
But first, a black college student who was detained by police while picking up trash outside his apartment building in Boulder is planning to file a lawsuit over the incident, according to his attorney.
Officer John Smiley was on patrol when he confronted Zaid Atkinson in early March. The encounter escalated. Eventually, Officer Smiley pulled his weapon and more officers arrived. A newly released independent investigation by the former U.S. attorney, Bob Troyer, found no evidence of racial profiling and that no weapon was pointed at Atkinson during the incident.
Now, the officer has since resigned, but will be paid through February. Atkinson's lawyer, Siddhartha Rathod, says this punishment is inappropriate.
Either Boulder lacks the will or the ability to properly discipline its officers. And as such, Mr. Atkinson has to file a civil lawsuit.
Rathod says it will likely be months before the lawsuit is formally filed.
Governor Jared Polis has been on a bill signing marathon, it seems. He has signed a bill to fund full-day kindergarten, one that will create specialty license plates for women who have honorably served in the military, among others. And one of the latest is a bill that aims to narrow the pay gap between men and women. KUNC's Scott Franz has more.
The Equal Pay for Equal Work Act lets workers sue their employers if they're being underpaid because of their gender. And employers can no longer ask prospective employees for their salary history. Democratic Representative Janet Buckner says she sponsored the bill to benefit her three granddaughters.
We all know what a difference it makes in self-worth when you are paid what you deserve.
The Institute for Women's Policy Research estimates that in 2016, women working full-time in Colorado made 86 cents for every dollar a man made. I'm Scott Franz.
High-profile events like the Columbine or Parkland shootings and the recent shooting at STEM school in Highlands Ranch have many districts taking a hard look at their security plans. But there's no definitive evidence as to what programs and technology work best. Guns in America's Aditi Bunlamudi has more for KUNC.
Talk to parents dropping their kids off at school, and they'll tell you they're thinking about security.
I think for school safety, you know, you can't really put a dollar on it.
I want my kids safe. That's my opinion. I don't think we need to make a business out of it, but we should keep our kids safe.
In 2017, the market for school security systems was worth $2.7 billion, according to IHS Market, a research firm. There are endless products, from $60 door locks that can withstand a sledgehammer, to former special operations agents that will embed inside a school, to special toilets schools can buy for long lockdowns.
You can look on Amazon. I think you could even buy them there. It's like you buy these 5-gallon buckets that has a toilet seat on it and a roll of paper towel, of toilet paper, and you could
sanitary like, wipes.
And yeah, there's like this package that you can buy. So
that's Tracy Fowler and Chris Blyce. Blyce is the chief operations officer for Chatham County School District in North Carolina. Fowler is the district's executive director of student services and support programs. Chatham County Schools realized they needed a change in their security plan in November of 2017. When a hunter shot a deer near one of the schools.
Teacher called. Well, this was at about 7:45, and the kids were just getting there. So there's a line of cars down the front of the school and out to the road. So what do you do about that? And who does it?
And the following February, two Chatham County schools were placed on lockdown when someone stole a vehicle and came near the schools. It became apparent to Blyce and Fowler that they needed a new lockdown procedure. But when they started looking, the options seemed endless. And expensive.
I mean, it's overwhelming. I mean, it really is. There's more stuff out there than you could ever use.
Blythe says he gets at least 2 sales pitches per week on a new app or lock or training module. But a recent study from the Journal of Violence and Gender found no evidence that increased technology or security programs reduce firearm violence in schools. Heather Schwartz is a senior policy researcher at RAND Corporation. She's studied how technology can be used to make schools safer.
There's a lot we don't know about which types of technology are effective in making schools safer. Yet there's an abundance of types of technology for school districts to wade through.
Schwartz says it's really difficult to study what technology works well, particularly because the factors change depending on the school, how big the school is, what safety procedures the school already follows, and how closely the staff follow those procedures. So what are schools supposed to do? How do they wade through the options?
When you're thinking about safety, you need to think about the whole picture. Training staff on your policies, deciding what particular policies to implement, and what technologies in this case, and then how are you going to maintain it over time?
Blythe and Fowler in Chatham County followed that approach. And for Blythe, it's not about the stuff. It's about communication and organization.
It's finding the balance, and it's understanding that these are things that help you. They can't be where you're putting your faith.
In the end, they just wanted more eyes around the school. They've installed more security cameras and added 4 additional school resource officers. They're in the process of replacing the physical locks on their doors with badges and a computerized system which updates who has access. They're also looking into a program which would call law enforcement faster. Blythe says preparing for an active shooter is like preparing for an airplane crash. On the rare occasion that it happens, we question our safety in some of the safest places.
We're training hoping that we never have an airplane crash, and we're doing everything that we can so that if we have one, we can get through it. That's about the best we can do.
He and Fowler never found a magic bullet solution or a cure-all contraption, but they feel they found something that works for their schools, and they didn't have to rely on fancy gadgets to get it done. For Guns in America, I'm Aditi Bandlamudi.
Guns and America is a public media reporting project on the role of guns in American life. You can find more at KUNC.org.
Depending on your budget, it can be hard to find a home in northern Colorado. That's the issue playing out right now in Greeley and Fort Collins. Hundreds of new homes could soon be built at the base of the foothills west of Fort Collins. But as KUNC's Matt Bloom reports, some residents are speaking out because open space is on the line.
During its time, Hughes Stadium in Fort Collins hosted hundreds of football games and other memorable events, like this Bob Dylan concert in 1976. But it was torn down last spring after Colorado State University built a new stadium on campus. The "what comes next" question has been on the mind of Z Ziola ever since. Here he is at a neighborhood meeting in April that a couple hundred people attended.
Obviously, if we just drop a housing thing on here, that trail closes. It gets so busy and eroded, it goes away.
Right now, Lennar, a home developer, is in the process of buying the land from CSU. Lennar wants to build between 600 and 700 homes here, and that would be right next to the Maxwell Natural Area. It's more than 50 acres that includes hiking and biking trails, and Ziola has lived across the street from it for the past 20 years. I met him at the trailhead on our mountain bikes.
I know the roads can't handle that. I know there's no traffic signals. But I also know that doing that, like I said, a pencil's line across from this Maxwell Natural Area is going to have negative impacts on the conservation and recreation of this area.
But the reality is Fort Collins also needs more new homes.
We really have not kept up with housing.
Cameron Gloss leads the city's planning department.
If you actually look at the numbers and you see the regional growth where we're actually pushing some of our workers out further and further from the community.
So this is what the growing pains in Fort Collins look like. In the past decade, the population has grown by nearly 30,000 residents. The median home price is now $420,000 and steadily going up. And Gloss says projects on the scale of the Hughes site are a rarity.
But you can imagine all the sites in Fort Collins. This is one of our largest opportunity sites and an area where if you were to build a new neighborhood, this might be a good fit.
Optimally, we would have some kind of a buffer zone there.
John Stokes is the Natural Areas Department Director. He's aware of the tension between the new neighborhood and the Maxwell Natural Area.
To be pragmatic, we live in a growing community. And so we have to, I think, view new developments as partners in all of this, because we are partners. We all live together. We're going to have to figure out how we live together and how we interface a new development with an open space or a natural area.
Those types of conversations are also happening on a much broader scale. Right now, the city's updating its natural areas master plan for the next 10 years.
We can add more land to our portfolio. We can build additional trails or trail connections. We can do all of those things. But over time, I would expect to see these trails get more crowded. I do believe that that is inevitable.
I did not think that was going to be that hard. All right.
It doesn't look as hard as
all right.
Back at the Maxwell Natural Area, Ziola and I bike up to get a better view of where Hughes Stadium used to stand. As we're looking out over empty space, he says he's open to that kind of collaboration.
You let the developers make their money, but also use that as a reason to invest and a reason to better manage the natural area to accommodate for all those people. Because at the end of the day, more people recreating in our natural areas in a responsible way is a good thing.
CSU and Lennar didn't want to comment for this story. But a final deal on the sale of the Hughes Stadium land is expected later in the year. Once it's done, a detailed plan for the neighborhood will be released to the public. If that goes through, construction on new homes could begin next summer. Matt Bloom, KUNC, Fort Collins.
Okay, so if the thought of house hunting along the Front Range has you frustrated...
Yes, it does.
Stay with us, because Stacey Nick is going to introduce us to what sounds like an amazing way to relieve stress. I mean, it involves smashing things. What could be wrong with that?
I don't think anything sounds wrong with that. But first, it is commencement season. Caps are flying, celebrations are happening, speeches are being made. But a couple in particular are catching some attention. Oprah Winfrey spoke at Colorado College. She told the graduating class that they can transform the world every day with their actions. The global media leader, philanthropist, producer, and actress was also given an honorary degree from the college. In her address, she said small steps lead to big accomplishments.
And I'm here to tell you that your life isn't some big break like everybody thinks it is. They're waiting on the big break. It's actually about taking one significant life-transforming step at a time.
Winfrey had originally planned to attend the ceremony in support of one of the graduates who had attended the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls in South Africa.
Oh, nice. Now, for those of you who are venturing out for graduation ceremonies or traveling around this time in general, you will find gas is slightly cheaper than it was this time last year. AAA Colorado says regular gas averages $2.86 a gallon in the state. That is down a whole 3 cents from last year.
So don't spend that all in one place. And be prepared to share the roads with a lot of other drivers. AAA predicts close to 785,000 Coloradans will travel this Memorial Day weekend.
Oh boy. Now, the other big speech getting some attention happens at the U.S. Air Force Academy, which holds its graduation ceremony on May 30th at Falcon Stadium, including a demonstration performed by the Thunderbirds at the conclusion. And President Trump is scheduled to deliver the commencement address then. Now, something you may not have known about the Air Force Academy campus is the role that a world-renowned landscape photographer and environmentalist played in bringing the campus's inception to life. From KRCC in Colorado Springs, Abigail Beckman reports on how Ansel Adams helped shape the Air Force Academy.
Ansel Adams is known for his iconic black and white photographs of Yosemite National Park and of Japanese Americans in internment camps during World War II, among other work. According to a biography from the Ansel Adams Gallery in Yosemite, he, quote, endlessly traveled the country in pursuit of both the natural beauty he revered and photographed and the audiences he required. In the 1950s, that was just north of Colorado Springs.
Ansel Adams enters the picture for the Air Force Academy
in a way that I find very interesting.
Eric Coyne is the design director for the Chicago office of Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, or SOM, the firm where architect Walter Netsch worked. Netsch was part of the design team for the entire Academy campus, which graduated its first class in 1959.
Something architects are taught to do in school is to go and visit the site and take pictures of it and try to understand it at an intuitive or even kind of an emotional level. We've been known to go camp out on sites and live on a site for a few days in order to understand what it's like to be in the desert or be on a mountain.
For Walter Netsch of SOM, that meant moving to the location before any sketches were made.
And Ansel Adams and another photographer were commissioned to take very specific, very large format landscape photographs only of the site.
He says the photos were taken more or less from eye level, from the lower portions of the Air Force Academy site, looking up at the mountains.
A second photographer took aerial views looking down onto the site from above.
Coyne says there was a theme in the 1950s to present projects deemed of great importance to the public through an elaborate exhibit in an art museum. For the Air Force Academy, that was the Colorado Springs Fine Arts Center.
And these photographs were then blown up to wall size and used as a backdrop for the architect's also very large-scale site model. And so people would perceive the site model almost as though it were in the context of a landscape itself.
Rumor has it that Adams was paid just $1,000. Neither the Academy nor SOM could confirm that, though. SOM retains the rights to Ansel Adams' negatives from the Air Force Academy project. They're stored in a central repository of records at the firm's Chicago office, much like the records of the One Trade Center in Lower Manhattan, or the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, or even Picasso's renditions of a sculpture for the Chicago Civic Center from the 1960s.
And I've never been to it. I imagine that it is like the Raiders of the Lost Ark warehouse that's just an endless gigantic space covered with boxes as far as the eye can see.
And while the negatives were largely unknown, Coyne says they were never lost. More like in good company in that warehouse filled with plans, sketches, and notations that would make any art historian weak at the knees.
Those pieces that are constantly being asked for by various historians or researchers are kept actually here in the building in our basement. But where exactly those Ansel Adams negatives were, I could not say. I would guess that they were probably in that Raiders of the Lost Ark warehouse.
The photos were published in a book in 2004, and a few are hung up in the Academy's library. The project as a whole is one that Coyne says SOM is proud of.
To me, what's important about the Air Force Academy is that it is one of only two SOM buildings that have been declared national historic landmarks, and as such, bestows upon it a great place of honor and significance in America's cultural landscape and cultural history.
A cultural landscape and history many on the Front Range drive by every day, all of which came to life with the help of Ansel Adams. I'm Abigail Beckman.
Carly, have you ever accidentally broken a plate or shattered a glass?
Yeah, usually in the most embarrassing situations.
I think we can all relate. Most of us have. That's often followed with apologies perhaps some colorful language.
But purple.
A new movement out of Boulder wants to reframe the idea of breaking things from regret to empowerment. KUNC's Stacey Nick has more.
It all began with a flashing image, a blank wall with a plate smashing against it. For more than a year, Aria True would see that just before having a seizure.
I finally figured out it was my body's way of trying to break the tension that was about to happen.
Later, the Boulder-based life coach told a friend about what she saw.
And we laughed and we realized, you know, there's probably a lot of people that need to break some tension and maybe a lot of people that want to break some plates.
And so Women Breaking Plates was born. The movement, which began just over a year ago, brings women together to break down the things that are holding them back.
And so these breaking of the plates and breaking out of the norm, it just creates this roar in the room of everyone cheering and just feeling like, oh my gosh, we just did that.
Sounds fun, right? I thought so too. So when True offered me the opportunity to come to her home and try it, I jumped at the chance. First, True has me write words and images of things holding me back on a stack of 5 plates. Then we head out to the garage. I have to admit, the mix of giddiness and stomach-churning anxiety is strange.
We spend our whole lives trying to not break anything, and I think it's a symbolism for how we're all feeling inside.
Okay, we're about to break some plates.
Nice.
Okay. All right. I guess I'm going to start.
Okay. So okay. Just give yourself a moment to connect with this and realize that this is maybe something you experienced, but it's not the whole truth of you, and that you have the power to let this go.
Okay. And how far should I throw this? I'm guessing I should give it some pretty good clearance.
Right. Yep. Yep. And you can't do frisbee here because there's no wall. But if you just
down. You can more like...
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. This feels really weird and like I'm not supposed to do this. So I have this little feeling of like being a little kid, like about to do something that I'm not supposed to do. All right. Here goes nothing.
I'm not going to lie. Smashing something into tiny little pieces on purpose feels really, really good. But here's the thing. It's also kind of like potato chips.
One plate is fun, and to do one plate at a time is nice, but to do 4 or 5 plates in a row is life-changing. Yeah! And just like, bam, bam, bam. By the time you throw that 5th plate, you just break into like tingles in your body because your body's having the experience of like, I'm taking my power back. No, that story ends here.
That's actually the phrase painted on the wall used at events. That story ends here. Because these events aren't just about breaking things down. The other half of the event is about building yourself back up with opportunities for participants to find healing. The program also has a few men involved in what are called honoring roles, where they can offer support. For now, it's the only place men are involved. That's because in the era of the Me Too movement, Women Breaking Plates co-founder Danielle Court says it was important to make sure this is a safe place for women to take their next steps.
Being a woman who tried to be nice my whole life, tried to keep it together, tried to be a good girl, and then being able to step out and say, no more, you know, and saying no more to something that no longer serves me and breaking this plate, it's such an elated feeling, and I feel that a lot of women struggle with that.
Eventually, they'll add male coaches to create a Men Breaking Plates program. Now, you may be wondering, what happens to all of those broken plates afterwards? Well, while mine are headed for the trash bin, plates from the events are typically collected and given to local artists who will use them to create art. Stacy Nick, KUNC Boulder.
Women breaking plates. Who knew? I know I'm dying to get my hands on some smashable plates right now.
Me too. Well, you can find out more about the program at our website, kunc.org.
The new film from China, Long Day's Journey Into Night, is reportedly the biggest art house hit ever in that country. For KUNC film critic Howie Mofshevitz, who teaches film and television at CU Denver, the movie is like an ancient tale rewoven into the fabric of the 21st century.
Long Day's Journey Into Night by Chinese filmmaker Bi Gan is a dream. Sometimes a literal dream with a character who dreams, but the rest of the time the movie is simply dreamlike, except that it's never simple. A man searches for a woman he loved long ago. That's probably the essential structure. But as the movie leaps and slithers and jumps its way along, it also brings in memory and stories within stories. Director Bi Gan took inspiration from all over the cultural map. He mentions American writer Henry Miller, Russian-French painter Marc Chagall, medieval French poets, and a number of Chinese filmmakers from the past. The international title comes from the masterpiece by American playwright Eugene O'Neill. The movie has the slow, unstoppable feel of Russian Ark, the 2002 movie shot in a single 99-minute take in the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, Russia. Unfortunately, an hour-long sequence in 3D was in 2D on the copy shown for review. The film's a jumble, but it's a remarkable organic glide through a fascinating, often difficult landscape, and you don't have to know all these sources. The action takes place in dark, dank settings, long, wet hallways and corridors that seem to lead nowhere. There's no sunlight, no bright moments, just oppressive dark blues and difficult greens. The film spends a long time in a mineshaft where the man, Lo Hongwu, Huang Ju, is led on his search. He pushes a cart for ore along a track. The mine, of course, is long, deep, dripping, and metaphorical, and like a dream, there seems no way out. A map on a wall becomes a ping-pong table, and the young man who claims to have drawn the map says that if Hongwu can beat him in ping-pong, he will lead him out of the maze of the mine. The boy turns out to be a lousy ping-pong player who gives up easily, but his promise to guide Hongwu out of the mine is a false lead, his map incoherent. It's the logic of dream, and the film wraps itself around itself. One tangent leads to another. Hongwu finds himself shooting pool with a woman who runs a pool hall, but barely plays the game herself. The film feels like ancient folk tales, where the young man, and it's usually a young man, has to perform convoluted tasks. Repeat this thing 3 times and that thing another 3 times in order to reach the gate of the castle, which will only appear when he's ready to see it, because it has no existence in actual geography, only in the spiritual geography of the young man's mind and heart. But those timeless stories have goals. When the character performs all his tasks and gets help when he needs it, something's gained. In Long Day's Journey into Night, the hero's journey does not lead to a great aha moment. There's no crescendo of understanding or self-realization or union with a deity. Long Day's Journey into Night is the work of a Chinese director not yet 30 years old. And like other Chinese filmmakers of his generation, he does not see life as a magnificent and coherent structure. For director Bi Gan, China may be an incredible economic juggernaut capable of immense physical projects, but Chinese society is fragmented. The old codes of behavior are falling apart, and the possibility of a clear goal has been lost. Long Day's Journey into Night, like Eugene O'Neill's play, gets foggier and less certain as it progresses. Hongwu searches for the object of his desire, but he only finds himself deeper into the artifice, the pretenses, and, as the film itself says, the lies that make up the movies. The movie ends with a mirror, and maybe the only thing the mirror can reflect is ourselves. For KUNC, I'm Howie Mofshevitz.
This has been Colorado Edition, made possible with support from our KUNC members.
If you enjoy this weekly connection to Colorado news, you can support or work with a contribution anytime in any amount at KUNC.org. Our show this week was produced by me, Erin O'Toole.
And me, Carly Huckles. News director Catherine Welch contributed to our show, along with editors Brian Larson and Jackie High, who manages digital.
Our intro music is Remember Me by Colorado musician Kalatana. We also heard another Colorado musician, Robbie Reaver, with Bling Bong. And that graduation favorite composed by Sir Edward Elgar, Pomp and Circumstance March, not as I believed as a child for many years, a song called My Reindeer Fly Sideways. I learned it at Girl Scout camp. Other music in this episode was provided by Blue Dot Sessions.
If you like what you're hearing, make sure you never miss an episode.
Don't do it.
Subscribe to Colorado Edition at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
And join us next Sunday evening at 9 on KUNC.